Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of July, 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are poll tax on parking, remembering the three RAF pilots after 75 years, and man charged in murder probe. So please, can we have the story behind the first headline, Daphne?
Yes, certainly. Poll tax on parking. An increase in Winchester residents' parking charges, dubbed a poll tax on parking, is set to be introduced while free parking would be ended in the district's market towns. Under a new agreement, which is set to be made between Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, the cost of residents' on-street permits could more than double from £22 a year to £50. It would also see WCC ending free on-street parking in the city centre and in market towns in the district, including Alresford, Bishop's Waltham and Wickham, where pay and display will be introduced. A report outlining the agreement acknowledged that the move is likely to be unpopular. However, City Council leader and Lib Dem councillor Lucille Thompson said it was hoped that the increase could be spread to reduce the first permit price rise, adding, "It is slightly more complicated than the report suggests." The report states, "The revised agency agreement requires an increase in permit charges to £50 for first permits, which can be phased over 3 years. This increase will address the deficit highlighted above and contribute to the County Council's operating costs. Also, a review of parking administration is currently being undertaken to ensure apportionment of costs to on-street and residence parking is accurate in the future." The report added there are currently around 3,000 people with first permits which will be affected by the price hike. As previously reported, the council was asked to decide earlier this year whether it wanted to continue operating the parking service, which it currently does, on behalf of HCC, or hand it back entirely. The increase was proposed in a bid to run the service on full cost recovery basis and not be subsidised by the district's on-street parking accounts, which are partly made up of cash from fines and tickets. Speaking in October, when the move was first announced, Lib Dem City and County Councillor Martin Todd said, "There are better ways of plugging council finances, dubbing it a poll tax on parking." In March, the then Winchester City Council leader, Conservative Councillor Caroline Horrell, said she had struck a deal with the county to halt the rise, which was due to come into effect from April, while they discussed the now approved Winchester Movement strategy. Councillors Horrell and Todd have been approached for comment.
Remembering the three RAF pilots after 75 years. 50 people gathered in the countryside near Itchinstoke to remember three RAF pilots who died in a training accident 75 years ago. The event, organised by the Alresford Historical and Literary Society and the Royal Air Force Association, RAFA, remembered the little-known incident which happened on July the 22nd, 1944. The three Spitfire pilots were instantly killed when their planes collided above Folly Hill. Stan Upton, a local farm boy who witnessed the crash when he was 14 years old, told the crowd of his memories. He said, Although my memory isn't great these days, I remember the crash well. I saw them hit into each other above the fields and then fall to the ground in their separate directions. It's important to remember these pilots because the RAF did a lot for us and we wouldn't have been where we are today without them. They were practicing for D-Day and were prepared to give their lives for ours. After Stan had finished his speech, the last post was played as a Spitfire flew over the heads of the crowd and then towards the fields where the pilots crashed. Spectators were invited back to St Mary's Church in Itchen Stoke for a ceremony led by June Ward, the reader of St Mary's Warsash. Chairman of the Alresford Historical and Literary Society, Glenn Gilbertson, was joined by Stan and members of the RAFA to unveil an information board about the crash. It is to be kept in the porch of the church and points visitors in the direction of Folly Hill, where the crash site can be seen. Mr. Gilbertson said, "Though it may have been an accident that killed these three pilots, it is important to remember the sacrifices that were made on behalf of our country and the way we live today. Training can go wrong, but if people like these three pilots hadn't put their names forward to fight in the war, then where would we be? Freedom was brought by this righteous war, and we must remember those that were part of it. The Society hopes to erect a permanent memorial at Folly Hill." And this article's accompanied by three photographs, one of members of the RAFA and Glenn Gilbertson as they unveiled the new board about the crash, another one showing a Spitfire similar to the three that crashed at Folly Hill flying above. And then there's a picture of Stan Upton, 89, as he told the gathering about his memories of the crash.
Man charged in murder probe. A man will be sentenced next month after refusing to give police investigating a possible targeted murder codes to access devices. Aston Hannis, 28, of Wolford Close, Stanmore, Winchester, pleaded guilty at Portsmouth Magistrates Court last Thursday after being charged under the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act. Hannis is due to be sentenced at Portsmouth Crown Court on August the 16th. He remains in custody. It comes after police investigating the death of a man found dead with shotgun wounds arrested a sixth man on Thursday morning. As previously reported, Gurinderjit Ray was found dead in a car in Shepherd's Farm Lane, Corhampton, on Saturday, July the 13th, at 9:58 a.m. Officers were called to a lay-by by a member of the public, who discovered Mr. Ray, also known as G, in a car. A post-mortem confirmed the 41-year-old had died as a result of shotgun wounds, with police believing it was a targeted incident. His next of kin have been informed and were being supported by specialist officers. In a statement, his family said, "Gurinderjit was a devoted father to his two young children and a loving fiancé to his partner. He adored his parents. He had an infectious sense of humour and would always find the best of any situation. He was a principled man and would always be the first to offer help to those that needed it. He will be missed dearly by all his family and friends." Officers confirmed a sixth man, a 31-year-old from Winchester, was arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to murder. That comes after a 25-year-old man, a 28-year-old man, and a 29-year-old man, all from Winchester, and a 31-year-old man from Eastleigh were all arrested on suspicion of murder. They have all been released on police bail, pending further inquiries. a 31-year-old man from Winchester was arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to murder. He has since been released on police bail, pending further inquiries. Officers are urging anyone with information to come forward.
Here are the death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bailey, Molly Christine Bailey, peacefully at home, aged 88. Another Bailey, this time with a Y in their surname rather than an I, Alan John Michael Bailey, aged 74, in Winchester Hospital. Corner, Captain Alaric John Corner, known as Larry. Gerard, Bill Gerard, at home, aged 85. Habgood, Brian Morris Habgood, aged 82. Phillips, Margaret Rose Phillips, known as Peggy, peacefully in her sleep, aged 86. And we'll go over to Daphne, please, for Christian comment.
And this week, Christian comment comes from Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of the Winchester Diocese School of Mission. I was overhearing a conversation in the kitchen. Our visitor from Rwanda, Marcel, had met my son for the first time and was teaching him how to speak in Kinyarwandan, the language Marcel speaks at home. My son is a keen linguist, and since he is planning to spend a month living in Rwanda later this year, it was time well spent. Listening to Marcel, my son managed to get his tongue around the basic greetings that open up a conversation. We can't learn a language without listening. In fact, we can't do much without listening. How many times do you get in after a hard day and have half an ear listening to those you might live with and half an eye on a screen? We can't have relationships with those we love the most without listening. Listening means being attentive. It's about hearing the story, feeling the emotions, watching out for the pauses, recognising the significance of the silences as much as the words that are said. Watching the face muscles and looking at the eyes of the speaker tells a thousand words. Listening means asking the right questions in the right way. It might involve drawing out the story that is left unsaid, or respecting that it remains hidden. Listening is an act of giving. When God became human in the form of Jesus of Nazareth, God entered into a listening project. Whilst Jesus did do some teaching, much of what Jesus says that is captured in the Gospels is in response to questions people ask him. Jesus was listening to people. Some of the conversations he has are profoundly moving. I think of the woman at the well in chapter 4 of John's Gospel that covers gender and racial issues, history, religion, politics and culture, as well as being deeply personal. The woman's life is transformed, and so is Jesus. Listening for him is like receiving bread to eat. Or I think of the woman who was accused of being caught in adultery. Jesus responds to her accusers, saying, "Let him who is without sin cast the first stone." Jesus' listening project also meant listening to God his Father. Perhaps some of the most important words that he heard from his Father were, "You are my Son, with you I am well pleased." That deep assurance of love and relationship became the foundation for life for all who receive the gift of faith. The BBC Listening Project says, "It's surprising what you hear when you listen." The project shares stories of people's lives, which weave the fabric of our society. When we listen, we find what is common between us. We empathise, we sympathise, we share. How much attentive listening have you done today? And as I said, that comes from Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, Winchester Diocese School of Mission.
And our first letter is entitled Obstacles. Sir, everyone should be able to walk on pavements without worrying about vehicles blocking their way. Cars parked on pavements force people into the road, which is particularly dangerous for many, including blind and partially sighted people, parents with pushchairs and young children, wheelchair users, and others whose mobility aids. Pavement surfaces are not designed to carry the weight of vehicles, and the added maintenance cost of repairing cracked and damaged paving adds an unnecessary financial burden to our already cash-strapped council. The Hampshire Chronicle has a real opportunity to take a proactive lead on pavement parking and should be applying for traffic regulation orders to ban pavement parking across the area. And that's from Alan Woodard, Whitecliff Avenue, Portsmouth.
This letter from Eben Wilson of King Alfred Place, Winchester, is headed Green Nonsense. Sir, we should all note the claptrap offered by Green campaigners in their objections to the Junction 9 M3 improvements discussed in the Chronicle on July the 11th. Their policy proposals are completely at odds with their objectives and lousy economics. They want to curb car and lorry use even if they do not pollute, citing extravagant use of clean energy that they say will be in short supply. Have they not heard of the price system? High demand raises prices that ration use, and it encourages new supply. Engineering choices and legislation favouring low carbon sources generate cleaner solutions, usually at lower prices. The economic cake is not finite when we adopt technology. Rather than supporting a new junction that will allow traffic to go past Winnell at a fuel-efficient 50 miles per hour, they want to stick us in buses, those polluting boxes that spend half the day empty, not taking anyone to where they want to go. And who'd take a bus to Winchester or Basingstoke from Southampton Parkway when there is an existing fast train service? As for digging up Southern Hampshire to widen railways and create cycle networks, think of the energy costs and traffic pollution of those disruptions. I run a business that distributes from both Hampshire and the south of Scotland. We have clients nationwide. We need the trunk road network to move stuff efficiently, generating the taxes that pay for environmental schemes. Essentially, what so many green supporters want to do is curb economic growth, which is the one thing that can create the wealth to resolve human pressures on our ecosystem. I too don't want to ruin our planet, but choosing poverty is the best way to pollute it. That's from Eben Wilson, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Catcher Ailing and it's headed Netball Now. Sir, I hope that the members of Winchester City Council, who decided it was not worth building netball facilities at the new leisure centre that could cater for even regional level games, have been watching the World Cup. England have just won the bronze medal. The arena is alive with women of all ages, utterly engaged and enthralled. The sportsmanship, athleticism and performance of this team will ignite players now and in years to come. There is no doubt that netball can play a key part in engaging women in sport and staving off obesity because it is played at grassroots level and all the way to international level. The big but is that we need enough accessible, appropriate venues with the right number of courts and enough runoff space to satisfy the increasing demand for the sport. The recent decisions about the new Winchester facility are short-sighted, as usual justified purely on cost basis. Has this calculation taken into account that the cost of a suitable netball provision could be offset against the cost saving to the NHS resulting from the mental and physical health benefits of being actively involved in a female-relevant team sport and a functioning team? And that comes from Katja Ayling, Chesil Street, Winchester.
The next letter's from Phil Gagg, and the title is Disaster Looms. Sir, if only I could agree with Elizabeth Thorne, Chronicle Letters, July the 18th, that the proposals for the M3 Junction 9 are a victory for common sense. They are an anachronistic disaster. The government, Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council are all absolutely right to make declarations of climate emergency. The first priority must be to halt every scheme that will make matters worse. We must first halt all airport expansion, and immediately after, we must halt all road building. These proposals, coupled with the smart motorway proposals, will make a bad situation impossible. Any increase in road capacity always increases the amount of traffic, noise, pollution, and greenhouse gas emissions. Congestion is only ever temporarily relieved. It always returns. When the Winchester bypass was replaced by the motorway, we were promised an end to traffic jams, but the jams have long since returned. Traffic spreads. More traffic on the M3 and A31 will mean more traffic throughout our area. Government figures show that in 2017, 60% of the greenhouse gas emissions in Winchester District came from road transport. These proposals will raise road transport share even higher. Cutting transport emissions must be top priority in any climate emergency action plan. It will not work otherwise. Let's be creative and remove the traffic jams in other low carbon ways. We can put more goods onto the railway, improve local passenger train services, build more stations, develop a network of affordable, fast local buses, build a rail-linked freight distribution centre. There are no choices in tackling global heating. We have to do everything and do it immediately. We cannot afford to make matters worse. Those who care about our future and the future of our children can type M3J9 into their search engine before August the 27th and answer the questionnaire telling Highways England to recognise the climate emergency and scrap the scheme. And that's from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
This letter is headed Put Out Flags. Sir, Tuesday, July the 16th at 3:10 p.m. Put the flags out. A road sweeper for the first time in over 2 years came to Hack Drive in Golden Common. One has been to the village, but never to Hack Drive. Always missed. Well done, Winchester City Council. I hope to see him again when the leaves come down to save blocking the drains. That letter is from Peter Kent Mason, Lib Dem ex-City and County Councillor of Hack Drive, Colden Common.
And now a letter from Ian Tate. Sir, last Wednesday I attended the City Council's Cabinet meeting mainly to listen to members discussing the Housing Revenue Account outturn paper. Whilst the title may seem a little dry, it actually details the excellent position the council's housing service is in and what a great job officers are doing under difficult conditions. I had asked to speak, as a member of the public, and had prepared a short and congratulatory statement. However, when Councillor Learney presented the paper, she seemed to lack any interest whatsoever and was almost dismissive of the excellent performance the paper reported. I was both shocked and incredibly saddened by her remarks, or lack of them, and said so. Having campaigned forcibly for more council and affordable housing over all the 19 years I served on the City Council, and having been an outspoken champion for the excellent council housing officers, I was staggered and angry at the way the current administration has now relegated housing to the second division in terms of priorities. Yes, the climate emergency is critical to everyone, but if you don't have a roof over your head, or you are sofa surfing with friends or relatives, or worse, homeless, you may not be able to commit time to the climate crisis. Council housing no longer has its own committee, but is covered by the business and housing policy or the scrutiny committees. Even King's Barton has its own special forum, which on Monday spent some 20 minutes discussing an overgrown hedge. The current position is absolutely disgraceful, and I feel that the new administration is letting down our tenants, housing officers and the wider public. I have said this so many times about Winchester. Yes, it's a great place to live, but it is an almost unaffordable place to find a home for most people on average salaries, and the Lib Dems don't seem to care. My sincere plea to the council leader is to put council and affordable housing back at the top of the council's agenda. And that's from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Week, Winchester.
Stan Paul writes about gravestone dispute resolved. Sir, after a friendly and informative meeting with the vicar at Colden Common Church over a mug of tea, the Reverend D. Drazy was more than understanding, but his hands are tied due to legalities set out by the Chancellor, who is the judge of the Consistory Court. So we agreed to disagree over what went on my mum's gravestone. Without going into all the ins and outs of the legal side, in a nutshell, the church's view is that it is all about who is in the grave and not who comes to visit. My view is if it is all about who is in the grave, then you should be able to carry out their wishes. And mum's wish was to have all the names put on her stone the same as dad's. So, to stop going round in ever-decreasing circles, we have had to compromise. The long and the short of it is we have had to put on my mum's gravestone what the church would allow, and we can have the stained glass window of Lily of the Valley set into the gravestone. The only comfort that we as a family can take from this is that Dad and Mum are together again in the churchyard of the church they both loved, and are now in God's garden, as it says on Dad's gravestone. God looked around his garden and saw a tired face. He put his arms around you and took you to his care, to make up for all that you have suffered and the pain that you have had to bear. The you now means them. And that's from Stan Paul, Warmford.
Another reason? Sir, in the brochure of this year's Winchester Festival, it was stated that it had been decided to make this year's festival the final one. The reason given was that when the festival commenced in 1997, there were not many artistic events in the city, and so the festival covered these omissions. Maybe I am wrong, but I believe there were various forms of entertainment at that time. Admittedly, the Theatre Royal was closed between 1996 and 2001 for major refurbishment, but I'm sure there were other forms of entertainment in the summers, including the Hat Fair. Perhaps there is another reason why the organisers decided to make the 2019 festival the last one. Be that as it may, the whole of the festival team have worked extremely hard over the past 22 years to give us a varied programme of talks, concerts, specialised tours and exhibitions. Well done! And this letter comes from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And now a letter from Daphne E. Smith. Sir, why are we British so obsessed with the weather? We start our daily greetings with, nice day, or in a tone of disgust, what a morning. We sometimes exaggerate, it's pouring cats and dogs, or it's freezing, when actually it is just a shower of rain or a chilly day. It's also a scorcher when it is a little warmer than usual. Why am I writing this letter? It is because my great-niece is marrying her fiancé next weekend, and I hope the weather is perfect for the occasion. I will also picture them on their overseas honeymoon on a lovely island beach with blue sea, golden sand and sunshine all day. And that's from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
And they could have got it here, couldn't they,
yesterday? Indeed they could.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we move to what's on around the city. You may have heard that the Theatre Royal is closed for refurbishment until September. But in the paper this week is news of two shows that will appear later and which you might like to book up for. Britain's most popular soprano, Leslie Garrett, will share stories from her life and no doubt sing a few songs at the Theatre Royal on Saturday the 14th of September. And looking forward to November, there will be A Murder is Announced by Agatha Christie from the 11th to the 16th. The Theatre Royal box office has moved to the Discovery Centre while the theatre is closed, but the telephone number is still 01962 840 440. And one other thing, on Tuesday, July the 30th, there's another lunchtime recital in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. It features Lucy Humphreys, who will be blowing her own trumpet. It is free, with a retiring collection. And now we come to the historical news. We start with 200 years ago.
Right. 200 years ago, Monday, July the 26th, 1819. Two short items here. Such is the rage for excursions to France that there are above 30 persons waiting at the inns in Southampton for the purpose of passage, the weekly packets having sailed full. And the second item, the meeting announced for the 5th of August next for taking into consideration the measures to be adopted for making a new road from Southampton to Winchester is expected to be numerously attended. 100 years ago, and that's Saturday, July the 26th, 1919. Huge sacrifices are, alas, recorded on every hand in connection with the late war, but one wonders whether there is general knowledge of the fact that of the two splendid regiments so intimately associated with Winchester, the King's Royal Rifle Corps and the Rifle Brigade, no less than 1,111 officers and 23,000 other ranks lost their lives. The regiments are so closely allied that in common talk people scarcely distinguish between them. And the second item. One of the happiest illustrations of parochial self-help, mainly at the instigation of the parishioners themselves, which it has been our fortune to record for a long time, was the effort in connection with the ecclesiastical parish of St. Paul, Wick. The need of an adequate parish hall is increasingly felt.
And we have two items from 50 years ago. Saturday, July the 26th, 1969. Firstly, the 1969 show of the Ossulbury and Morstead Horticultural Society was held in excellent weather on the Ossulbury School playing field last Saturday. The show was opened by Mr. Harold Hillier after an introduction by the chairman of the society, Mr. M. Atchley. Mr. Hillier, in his opening speech, remarked on the high standard of exhibits and said he was pleased to see so many entries from children. If the children could be encouraged to take an interest in horticulture at an early age, there was less chance of them turning into vandals when they grew up and ruining the countryside. Apart from the exhibits in the show tent, there were many attractions for those attending the show. Sideshows were organised by Mr. Nichols, and a new layout for the tents in the field was tried this year by Mr. J. Shaw and seemed to concentrate all the visitors in one area very satisfactorily. And so the second item. The news that the parish church of Winnell, closed for some years, is likely to be demolished in the near future, makes it desirable to put together what is known of its history and that of its predecessor. For Winnell has had its own church for many hundreds of years, faithfully served and maintained by a very small community. The parish of Winnell originally formed part of the great manor of Chilcombe, belonging to the Priory Church of St. Swithin of Winchester, the cathedral. The church or chapel at Winnell was probably one of the nine churches in Chilcombe referred to in the Domesday survey. It remains in the hands of the prior and convent until the dissolution of the monastery, but was re-granted by Henry VIII to the monk's successors, the dean and chapter.
And these two pieces are from 25 years ago, Friday, July the 22nd, 1994. Hampshire football fans had their World Cup final coverage ruined on Sunday after vandals shut down a major television transmitter serving over 1 million viewers. At about 8:50pm, thousands of television screens went blank during the first half of the Brazil v Italy clash, transmission being resumed about an hour later. The chaos was caused when vandals tampered with 11,000 volt cables at the Hannington transmitter near Basingstoke. Hannington transmits all four television channels to 700,000 homes within a 50-mile radius. And as a backup measure, it is powered by two separate electricity supplies from different areas. But the vandals had the inside knowledge to cut off both supplies, a fact that has caused great concern at Southern Electric. A company spokeswoman said they knew that there were two sources and they knew how to shut them down. They tampered with 11,000 volt overhead lines, and our staff have to wear protective clothing when they do that. They could have been killed. Southern Electric had a team on the site within a few minutes to repair the damage, and the company is now offering a £10,000 reward for any information that will lead to the successful prosecution of the people involved. It was an extremely silly and highly dangerous thing to do, causing maximum inconvenience, she said. A great many people were obviously wanting to watch the World Cup final. And the second item. At a site meeting to discuss the controversial plans for new Methodist church buildings in Waltham Chase, Mrs. Judy Brown, on behalf of the Curdridge Lane Action Group, listed their main objections: the disturbance from noise and excess lighting, the proximity of the building to the road, the uses to which the building might be put in the future, the road safety aspect, and adequacy of the car parking. District Councillor Norman Hibditch and members of the Winchester City Council Planning Subcommittee met last Friday with residents of Waltham Chase and members of the Methodist Church to discuss the proposed new buildings in Curdridge Lane. At rush hour, it was obvious that there was plenty of traffic passing along the country lane, making it difficult to hear what was being said at the outdoor meeting, and emphasising the need for careful consideration of any increase in traffic which enlarged premises would bring. Mr. Hibditch emphasised that no decision would be taken before the full committee met on August the 5th, but said the chapel, built in 1869, had been outgrown.
On to Chronicle comment, please, from Nick.
And this week, the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment follows on from the earlier account of the three RAF pilots who died over Itchinstoke. And the title is, "We Must Fight the Intolerance Within Us." We report on a poignant ceremony held on the edge of a field near Itchinstoke. A group of mainly elderly people gathered to remember the deaths of three RAF pilots killed in a training accident in July 1944. Their names, H.W. Adams, J.G.L. Hughes and B. Lees. Some people may wonder why these people bothered. The deaths were 75 years ago. What relevance does it have today? Well, its importance grows day by day. No one seriously thinks German nationalism will ever present the threat that it did in the Second World War, but the gathering at Itchinstoke highlights the importance of the eternal fight against extremism of all kinds. Today, the enemy is not Nazism, but a violence within this country. Not the egregious Tommy Robinson, but the growing intolerance in the hearts of ordinary people. It is an intolerance fuelled by social media and the internet. The quick, often crude denunciation of an opposing viewpoint, the questioning and doubting of the morals of political opponents, the self-righteousness. We must remember those three airborne deaths and learn to be nicer.
And can we have first person, please, Frieda?
Yes, this piece is headed Crime and Punishment by Khalid Aziz. I have just spent time in prison. Granted, it was an open prison and nothing like the last time I visited. That was Winchester Prison, seeing a local businessman who'd had a rather cavalier attitude towards rendering up VAT to HMRC. They threw the book at him, one suspects, as an example to others in his sector. As a white-collar criminal, he had almost immediately qualified for an open environment, but asked to come back to Winchester as his family had difficulties travelling miles north to see him. It was the same with my trip last week to one of Her Majesty's establishments in the west of England. There I visited someone I hadn't seen for over four decades, a colleague from my early days in broadcasting. This open prison was, compared to the brooding Victorian edifice that is Winchester Jail, a relative delight. Set in leafy countryside, its low-rise buildings created a relaxed, non-threatening environment conducive to preparing inmates for their ultimate release back into society. My former colleague had been there 11 months in the run-up to what he hopes will be an on-licence release in a few months' time. The trouble is, because there are so few open prisons, he was over 100 miles away from his home and family. Still, he was in good spirits and it was interesting to contrast his first-hand experience of the judicial and penal system with what one gleans from the media and from the very telling book The Secret Barrister, in which an anonymous barrister relates just how our justice system is falling apart. At times, the secret barrister comes across as special pleading on behalf of the legal profession, reeling under the almost total withdrawal of legal aid. If you are accused and not living in a cardboard box, to be legally represented, you'll have to pay for it yourself. The book highlights what the author calls the innocence tax. It works like this. You are accused. You rack up serious legal bills, certainly running into five figures and sometimes six, probably remortgaging your house in the process. If at the end of a long legal process you are found not guilty, there is no redress against the state. You cannot get your money back, not even a percentage. The Crown Prosecution Service took over from the police in placing criminality before the courts in 1986. Apparently, they will only proceed if they think there is a better than 50-50 chance of securing a conviction. They have to weigh the evidence carefully. Juries are notoriously fickle or justifiably sceptical. Weighing the probabilities must be a black art. My former colleague was convicted on a majority verdict, despite his brief being so convinced that he would be found not guilty, they had actually prepared an acquittal speech for the steps of the court. But it was not to be. He considered an appeal, but having sunk so much of his savings into legal fees to date, thought it better to do the time and move on, having already lost his reputation and his career. Recently, a senior judge told me the courts were empty, such was the low level of prosecutions being offered up by the police. No point in trying to interest the police if you're burgled. Just turn up at the police station the next day and get a crime number so you can claim on your insurance. The police, with some justification, claim prioritisation of meagre resources. If you're a burglar, you have a very slim chance of being caught and even less of being convicted. Yet burglary is traumatic. The American term is home invasion, for that is what it is. Meanwhile, those who are prosecuted face real trauma with no redress if they have been wrongfully accused and subsequently acquitted. The system needs fixing.
And one item from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Did you know the Pope's PR man is Winchester-born? Almost certainly a first. A Winchester-born man has been named by Pope Francis as his new spokesman. Matteo Bruni's appointment marks the latest change in the Holy See's communications operations under Francis. Mr. Bruni, 42, joined the Vatican Press Office in 2009, coordinating accreditations. In 2013, he took over organising the logistics for media during papal trips, negotiating access with host countries ahead of time, and shepherding journalists from venue to venue during the trips themselves. Born in Winchester, he was educated in Italy and speaks English and Italian fluently, as well as Spanish and French. Mr. Bruni, who has not previously worked as a journalist, told the Vatican's in-house media operation, Vatican News, that the world needs communications that are official, clear, transparent about events, and contribute to understanding the complexity of the world in which we live. And there's a photograph of Pope Francis meeting reporters in Chile last Thursday with Matteo Bruni, the official of the Vatican Press Office, looking on. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 26th of July, at 5:21 a.m. and begins again at 1 minute past nine in the evening. On Wednesday the 31st of July, it ends at 5:29 a.m. and begins again at 8:54 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. Now we continue with items of general news. Over to you, Daphne.
And the first item is headed, Help Discover If This Is A Painted Lady Year. Hampshire wildlife expert Chris Packham is urging fellow wildlife lovers to help him discover if the county is witnessing a once-in-a-decade spectacle. Unusually large numbers of painted lady butterflies have been spotted in mainland Europe in the past few weeks, and many are now arriving in the UK. Around 50 sightings have already been reported in various parts of Hampshire, including Winchester, Southampton and the New Forest. The brightly coloured butterfly often migrates from the continent during the summer, but once every 10 years millions arrive en masse. Chris, Vice President of Butterfly Conservation, is calling on people to take part in the Big Butterfly Count, to help discover if the UK is seeing a painted lady year. The last mass migration was in 2009, when around 11 million butterflies arrived. Chris, who lives in the New Forest, said, "The painted lady migration is one of the wonders of the natural world. Travelling at speeds of up to 30 miles per hour, these seemingly fragile creatures migrate hundreds of miles to reach our shores each year." Referring to the large number of sightings in Europe in spring and early summer, he added, "The signs are looking very promising. This could be a very good year for the painted lady, with high numbers already being recorded. The butterfly can turn up anywhere, so please look out for them. You could be witnessing a once-in-a-lifetime, a once-in-a-decade phenomenon." People are being encouraged to conduct a count in their gardens and local parks. Alternatively, they can do so while walking their dog or attending one of several events taking place across the region, including one at the Sir Harold Hillier Gardens in Romsey on August the 2nd. There will also be a guided butterfly walk at Broughton Down near Stockbridge on August the 11th. The count runs until August the 11th and sightings should be submitted online at bigbutterflycount.org, and that's illustrated by a lovely picture of Chris Packham, but sadly no picture of a butterfly, which would have been very useful for us to know what a painted lady looks like.
The next one's entitled Life-Saving Cancer Vaccine for Boys. Winchester schoolboys will soon have access to a life-saving vaccine. The news comes after it was announced by Public Health England that boys in year 8 at secondary school will be offered the human papillomavirus, HPV. This is the first time boys have been able to receive the vaccine, starting in September. Girls have been offered the HPV vaccination free since 2008. So far, 10 million doses of HPV vaccine have been given to young women, meaning over 80% of women aged 15 to 24 have received the vaccine. Since the introduction of HPV vaccination, infections of some types of HPV in 16 to 21-year-old women have reduced by 86% in England. Claire Simpson, screening and immunisation lead for Hampshire, said, "This universal programme offers us the opportunity to make HPV-related diseases a thing of the past and build on the success of the girls' programme. Offering the vaccine to boys will not only protect them, but will also prevent more cases of HPV-related cancers in girls and reduce the overall burden of these cancers in both men and women in the future. I encourage all parents of eligible boys and girls to make sure that they take up the offer for this potentially life-saving vaccine. It's important not to delay vaccination, as the vaccine may be less effective as adolescents get older." Public Health Minister Seema Kennedy added, "The success of the HPV vaccine programme for girls is clear, and by extending it to boys, we will go further to help prevent more cases of HPV-related cancer every year. Programmes like this are at the heart of our work to help people live longer, healthier lives through the NHS long-term plan. And I would encourage everyone who is eligible to take up this potentially life-saving vaccine. If they miss out on the vaccination for any reason, they should talk to their school nurse immunisation team." And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a syringe in two blue gloved hands of a nurse, no doubt.
We can only hope. This is headed, "School celebrates hitting 90 with party. Hundreds of former staff and pupils celebrated the 90th anniversary of a Winchester school last Friday, including one couple from the other side of the globe. Stanmore Primary hosted its giant tea party to mark the occasion, which saw an attendance of more than 250 people across the day. Special guests included the grandson of the school's first head teacher, Ian Dart, who had travelled from Victoria in Australia. Also Ernie Nunn, aged 95, who started at the school in the year it opened, 1929. And Margaret Cole, MBE, who was a lollipop lady at the school for 40 years. Chris Lindsay, who's been a governor at Stanmore Primary for 10 years, said, "This school is, of course, a building, but it is much more than that to the people who have memories here. It's a place of play, a place of work, a place of fun, and a place to develop. But most importantly, it is a key part of the community up here in Stanmore. And I am very pleased to see such an excellent turnout. Guests were invited to walk around the school grounds to view displays of old photographs and pieces of work created by the current pupils. Towards the end of the afternoon, speeches by Mr. Lindsay and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell, were given in the school hall. The speeches were followed by entertainment from the children. A plaque to commemorate the opening of the school 90 years ago has now been installed. There are three pictures. One, a portrait of Mary Broadway, who was a governor for 30 years. Then we have a former pupil, Lynn Kaplan, and another one, David Yaldron. And finally, four children on the stage performing a reading to guests. Now, I was there as a former teacher at Stanmore School for several years, and it was indeed a splendid day.
Divisive scheme is approved for town. A planning application that divided Alresford has been approved following a heated Winchester City Council planning committee meeting. Owners of the home and garden store Long Barn had submitted plans to increase the range of items sold, as well as expand the cafe by altering the conditions of its current planning permission. The application received a huge response, with 189 locals writing in support and 139 objecting. And after it was approved by 5 councillors to 2, one member of the public left his seat to address the meeting. He said, Once Alsford is an empty shell, I hope you will all be very happy with yourselves. None of you have taken any notice, and this is on your heads. Most objections claim the expansion will drain the business from Alsford town centre. During the meeting, objector Simon Evans, who originally supported an application for Long Barn 8 years ago, said, "I sat in here as the chairman of the Alsford Chamber of Commerce 8 years ago and was all for the Long Barn. Today I ask you to refuse this retrospective application. The applicant continues to copy and paste the key aspects of Alsford businesses, killing the market town. Long Barn continues to conflict what Alsford is all about. The products they want to sell were not included in the original application's conditions for the very reason of not encroaching other traders. But the directors of Long Barn, who were represented by their agent, Daniel Wiseman, believe their store is not impacting local trade. Mr. Wiseman told the committee, "I've been the consultant for Long Barn for 11 years, and this is a destination that has become a very encouraging asset to the town of Alsford. It has created 54 jobs and brings lots of customers from outside of the town. 68% of customers travel from 10 or more miles away. 58% of these then head further into the town. Long Barn want to regulate what is being sold and have worked extensively with the council officers to meet every one of their needs. They are much like everyone else. They are suffering from the threat of online retail. And if they are unable to get permission here, 10 years of growth risks being undone." Mr. Wiseman also pointed out that the vacancy rate in Alsford High Street is currently at 0%. There is not a single empty shop. Long Barn now has permission to sell more items, including food, clothing and jewellery. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who cast his vote against, said, "It is one of the loveliest towns in the district. We all know that the retail world has been extremely difficult and has changed the nature of all the shops. We also know that one of the big problems is the growth of the out-of-town retail in the last 30 years. This is of a different scale, but relevant to the town centre. Long Barn does impact. Once you start the downward spiral, it has a devastating follow-up. If Alsford dies, it will have a huge impact on the rest of towns like it. This is a step too far." In a statement, Long Barn directors Richard Norris and Jane Marsden said, "This is a very welcome result, not only for our staff, our customers and trading partners in town, but for the wider community too. We are delighted that we now have the planning permissions in place to continue to trade as a family-run, independent home and garden store with the space and range we have now. Despite this process being incredibly trying for us personally, it has shone a light on Alsford's unique position in the national retail landscape. The town centre now has no vacant retail premises and a loyal and supportive customer base. We will support Alsford as a favourable environment to trade by continuing to offer sustainable jobs for local people, as well as bringing many thousands of visitors to the area every year. It's been hugely heartwarming to receive so much support, and we would like to thank all of those who made such an effort to support us."
The title of the next piece is "The Very Best of Youth Celebrate Awards." Nearly 50 Hampshire young people celebrated golden success at the Great Hall in Winchester. The group attended a special ceremony to receive their Duke of Edinburgh's Gold Award, hosted by the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson, who is also the President of the Duke of Edinburgh's Award in the county. At the ceremony, each received a certificate of appreciation. Challenges participants took on included camping in Snowdonia, canoeing in Scotland, adventures to China and Morocco, as well as volunteering and crewing tall ships. The Lord Lieutenant said, These young people have demonstrated a huge amount of commitment and determination to gain this very prestigious award, and they can be very proud of their achievement. I know they will all have thoroughly enjoyed the challenge too. As there is a real need for leaders to train the next generation of young participants, I would urge them to continue their good work and enjoyment by offering their time and skills as volunteers for the D of E scheme. The Duke of Edinburgh's award started in the 1950s and requires participants to spend time volunteering, learning or improving a skill, taking part in a physical activity and undertaking an expedition. To achieve a gold award, a young person will typically give 50 hours of volunteering, spend a total of 18 months on the skill and physical activities, and undertake a 4-day wild country expedition. Councillor Keith Manns, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "I congratulate the young people on their gold awards. That is a great achievement." The Duke of Edinburgh Awards offer young people wonderful opportunities to learn new skills, meet others, and learn from experiences which will stand them in good stead as they progress through their lives. As well as the formal ceremony, the audience was entertained by Wilf McKenzie from Hampshire Music Service performing welcoming background music, and heard from Rosie Mae Johnson from Farnborough College about her residential stay in Morocco. And this one's accompanied by a photograph of all those successful children stood on the steps outside the Great Hall with their certificates.
This piece is about a conference for schools on single-use plastic. Plastic-Free Winchester and the University of Winchester are working together to fight single-use plastics usage. With funding from the County Council, they aim to work with every school in the district through a Plastic-Free Schools conference on October the 16th. Hannah Williams, chairman of Plastic-Free Winchester, said, "We know that there are real issues with single-use plastics and how they are damaging our planet, especially our oceans. Children want change, and they need our guidance and support. This conference is about us working with them and enabling them to make real changes for life in their schools, homes, and communities. The university has pledged to eliminate all unnecessary single-use plastics by December 2020. Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor, said, "I'm inspired by Greta Thunberg and the millions of schoolchildren all over the world who are protesting peacefully for change to combat the challenges we face as part of the climate emergency." And this is illustrated with a photograph of some very smiley ladies all standing around three special bins designed to help us recycle our plastic in a helpful way.
Perrins puts on a show to remember. Never have two opposing gangs been such good friends. This year's Perrins School production of West Side Story drew in hundreds of audience members during a 3-night run at The Grange, a professional opera venue known around the world. The storyline, based on the classic musical of the same name, followed two people from rival gangs who had fallen in love. Creative arts director Marilitsa Alexiou said, "Something special happened this year. Rehearsals with these talented children have been not only professionally undertaken, with a level of maturity beyond their years, but also with tremendous fun. They are the youngest cast to date, with the most challenging roles, and it's hard to believe that some of the leads are just 13 years old." This year, the school incorporated a new orchestra made up of past and present students, staff, parents, and members of the local community. Mel Cotton, director of music, said, It has been one of the most incredible journeys to prepare such a breathtaking musical score for the show, and hopefully an enjoyable experience for all. The school will be eternally grateful to all the hard work and dedication shown by the orchestra, without whom there would simply be no show. The set, described as worthy of the West End, was created by M3 Productions. And there are a couple of photographs with that of the youngsters, mainly boys, because they're the gang members, the Sharks and the Jets, I think, shown by their different coloured T-shirts, all wearing jeans and denim jackets. They're singing their hearts out, and it really does look enormous fun.
And the next piece is entitled Pilgrim's Pupils Take on Clergy in Annual Match. The recent Cricket World Cup final may seem like the climax of the one-day match for the summer, but there was one more to go recently. The annual cricket match between boy choristers and clergy at Winchester Cathedral took place when the Pilgrim School playing field resonated with the thwack of leather upon willow rather than hymns and psalms. Nobody at the cathedral knows precisely when the tradition started, but the annual cricket match has been enjoyed for a number of decades, and the choristers almost always win. This time, just by one run. They must have taken advice from our international players. And there's a picture of the young boys practising right outside the cathedral, with helmets on, no less.
Here we discover that the council opt for a simple name. Winchester's new leisure complex, currently being built at Bar End, has been officially named. The name Winchester Sport and Leisure Park was chosen to reflect feedback from the public to keep the name simple, clear, and incorporate the importance of developing a facility surrounded by parkland. The new Lib Dem administration has scrapped the Conservative idea to have a more obscure name, with their proposed names including Chalk Flowers, The Mint and The Soak. The centre, which will be run by leading leisure operator Everyone Active, is due to open in early 2021. Councillor Malcolm Prince, Cabinet Member for Sport, Leisure and Communities, said, "We want the name to reflect the importance of developing a park with facilities for all types of sport and leisure pursuits. The clear message was to keep it simple and ensure that it incorporates the Winchester name. This park represents the first step in creating sustainable, accessible sport and leisure facilities for everyone in our district. The 50-metre swimming pool is beginning to take shape, with the tank excavation now complete, while builders Wilmot Dixon are also laying pipework, concrete works and the foundation. The centre will include a training pool, multi-use sports hall, fitness suite, squash courts and hydrotherapy suite. And the article is accompanied with an artist impression of the foyer of the leisure centre, looking light and airy and very modern, with lots of people coming and going to enjoy their facility.
Climate change pressure grows. Hampshire County Council has decided to strengthen its declaration of climate emergency following a crowded meeting in Winchester last Thursday. Climate groups spoke at the meeting, asking the council to add teeth to their declaration by setting dates and deadlines. The council was asked to say when net zero carbon will be achieved and to give council officers a deadline to set an action plan. Responding to the decision, a spokesperson from Extinction Rebellion Winchester said, "Two cheers for the county councillors because they recognise the urgent need for action and set aside party politics to agree a way forward. But we'll wait to give three cheers till we see the action plan. It must include immediate and specific actions. We don't want weasel words like look into this or explore that. and whatever it says must be included in the council's budget for 2020 and after. A rally was held outside the council chamber as the meeting took place, with protesters from Alton, Petersfield and the New Forest holding banners. School children sang SOS from the Kids, a song composed by 11-year-old Simeon McCauley from Petersfield SOS Choir. Several of those who made deputations, including Winchester University, offered to work with the council over the plan. The spokesperson from Extinction Rebellion Winchester added, "We have many good ideas. Two we expect to see in the action plan are to replace all street lights with LEDs and to revoke the county council policy not to permit wind turbines on council land. Extinction Rebellion argues for a citizens' assembly to decide what must be done, drawing on representatives from all perspectives to examine evidence and make binding recommendations for urgent action."
The title of the next piece is Stabbing Charge. A 51-year-old woman has been charged with attempted murder in connection to a Bishop's Waltham stabbing. Detectives are continuing to investigate the assault on a 63-year-old lady at a house in Oak Road after being called at 11:30 a.m. on Monday. The woman had sustained stab wounds and was taken to hospital for treatment. Her injuries are described as serious but not life-threatening. Detectives on Tuesday night charged Paula Jane Ayres of Willow Road, Bishop's Waltham, with attempted murder. She was due to appear at Portsmouth Magistrates Court on Wednesday, as the Chronicle went to press. Detective Sergeant Steve Morrison said on Tuesday, "Our inquiries will continue today, so if you have any information about what took place, then please contact us. This is being treated as an isolated incident with no ongoing risk to the wider community. Residents will continue to see a police presence in the area today as officers make their inquiries. But if you have any concerns about this incident or anything else, then please speak to them. Anyone with information should call 101.
Plans are expected for the next phase of Barton Farm. A planning application for the next phase of Winchester's largest housing development since Badger Farm is due very soon. Phase 2A will include 250 homes at the Barton Farm project, also known as King's Barton. The news was announced in a report to councillors setting out the latest works, which will eventually see a new estate of 2,000 homes, 800 of which will be available to people on the City Council waiting list. The report said so far 205 homes were occupied at Phase 1B to the north of the site that borders Andover Road, with 18 remaining unsold. It added groundworks for the play area in that section have begun, and the phase is set to be completed this year. Following the planning application for Phase 2A, which is located centrally on the site, the first residents are set to move in at Phase 1A, the southernmost section, in late August. The latest update comes a couple of months after the first hole was dug at the new Barton Farm Academy. The school, which is part of the development, was originally meant to open in spring 2019 after planning permission was given to Hampshire County Council 4 years ago, but schedules were delayed due to the slow progress of the rest of the long-awaited scheme, which was given the green light back in 2012. Construction on the school is now expected to be finished by May next year. City and County Councillor Jackie Porter, who is also part of the County Council's Education Advisory Panel, said at the groundbreaking ceremony in May, "It's now running smoothly. We didn't have enough children to fill it last time, and of course the money from these children is necessary to run a school. But now lots of people moving in have children or are having children, and our team are predicting that the numbers will be sufficient in 2020. It's not a science, but an art, trying to figure out how many kids you are going to have. Of course, you never know how many people are going to move in or out.
Dressmaker of the Year. A Winchester woman has wowed judges with her sewing skills, with a national magazine naming her Dressmaker of the Year. Darlene Nutbeam, who works in the day centre at the City Council's Chesil Lodge, took the title after her daughter persuaded her to take part in the Sew magazine competition. The 54-year-old of Fairdown Close said, "I've always sewn. My mother was a sewer, so I was brought up with it." She said she was around 3 or 4 years old when her mum first showed her how to sew. She then taught her daughter to get involved. Darlene added, as well as being a hobby, she makes clothes for family and friends, but didn't think she was good enough to win a competition. As a prize, Darlene won a range of sewing and craft items. Among the judges for the competition were costume designers for TV shows Doctor Who and Strictly Come Dancing. Darlene wowed them with a little girl's frock, complete with sweet puff sleeves and an embroidered neckline. According to the magazine, Darlene's was unanimously chosen by the judging panel as the winner from 2,400 entries. And there's a picture of Darlene and the little frock, which is absolutely exquisite. It's pink with more pink roses on it and beautifully smocked all the way down. The workmanship is really, really something. So Darlene certainly deserves that.
The next piece is Rugby Club Appeals for Sponsors. One of the largest sports clubs in the Winchester district is appealing for new sponsors from local business. With the first 15 recently promoted to London 2 South West and a mini and junior section with 1,200 members, the club says it offers unrivalled opportunities. Steve Barrow, club chairman, says the club is going from strength to strength, but relies on sponsorship to achieve its goals and maintain progress. With sponsorship packages starting at only £500, investors are guaranteed good local area publicity and to be associated by a great solid local brand. This season sees the introduction of the new WRFC Under 23 Academy, new coaching teams for the seniors, ladies and girls. Also, the club hosts regional and county mini and junior festivals and is also a host to the RFU National Sevens event at Easter. Club treasurer and sponsorship manager Paul Rayner said, "Over recent times we have invested in the playing and clubhouse facilities at Nuns Road, and without valuable support from sponsors this would not be possible." Mr. Barrow urges any local companies that would like to discuss sponsorship to contact the club secretary, Ben Bevan, at secretary@winchesterrugby.com.
I'm sure you're all going to be pleased to know that the entrances to Alsford have been spruced up. The timber planters immediately in front of the brick and flint Alsford Town signs at the three entry points of the Cricketers Crossroads, Bishop Sutton Road and Winchester Road needed some TLC. Installed originally by Alsford Rotary around 20 years ago, the club selected local landscaper Jeff Amy of Complete Garden Construction to carry out the refurbishment. Jeff, in turn, contacted Mike Wise, the local manager of Cover's Timber and Builders Merchants in Prospect Road, who agreed to donate the oak timber and other materials free of charge. Alsford Rotary has expressed its gratitude to Covers for their generosity. Once approval had been received from New Alsford Town Council, Mr. Amy undertook the work at the end of May at Rotary's instigation, following which Anita Wade replenished the plants on behalf of the Town Council. And the picture shows these spectacular things with brick and the label, and it says, "Welcome to New Alsford, twinned with Briekbeck in Normandy," and the four men most closely involved are standing either side looking very happy, and quite right too. It's a very, very spectacularly good advertisement as you enter the town.
City Centre Multi-Face Centre Plan. Discussions are underway to open a new multi-face centre in Winchester City Centre. The city confirmed discussions with the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association. One possibility would be the former Citizens Advice Base in St George's Street. As previously reported, the council officially opened the new Citizens Advice Hub in Colebrook Street last month. The charity, which helps thousands of clients each year with issues ranging from benefits advice to debt and consumer problems, has been in the city since 1953. Their new ground-level location, next to the council HQ, is more accessible than their previous upstairs office in the Casson block on St George's Street. And the newly renovated space provides a more welcoming space for clients, volunteers and staff. A council spokesman said, "We have been in discussion with the association about the creation of a multi-face centre for some time. We are considering the options for the building on St George's Street and will continue to support the association to help them find accommodation to fulfil their ambitions. The association has been contacted for comment but is yet to respond."
Gallipoli remembered by primary pupils. A new piece of artwork by South Wanstead primary pupils has been installed at the Royal Hampshire Regiment Museum. The print, which was unveiled on Saturday by the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, is the culmination of a Year 6 project called Gallipoli Remembered. The museum was recently awarded a grant from the Gallipoli Association to undertake a joint project with a local primary school to commemorate those who died during the Gallipoli campaign of 1915. South Wanstead Primary was the successful applicant. Pupils studied the history and geography of the campaign, and they looked at the beach landings and the equipment the soldiers used, the escape equipment used by those taken prisoner, and the different ways in which soldiers are remembered. They researched soldiers who were killed in the battle, and their research was compiled into a printed booklet in addition to writing their own poems and reports on how they thought the soldiers would have felt preparing for and during the battle. Their final task was to make a piece of artwork as a memorial which will be displayed in the museum galleries in the Gallipoli case. For this, each pupil designed a tile, which were printed onto a large montage. The completion of Gallipoli Remembered was celebrated with a party in the museum's memorial garden for the pupils, staff and their families to see the artwork unveiled and to receive a copy of the booklet on the project. And this has two pictures accompanying it, one showing Councillor Patrick Cunningham with five of the children and an adult, and also their artwork on an easel, and there's also an inset close-up of their artwork.
Marwell's big cats meet zoo's latest attractions. Big cats at Marwell Zoo were given a sneak peek of the latest model to be installed as part of the popular Brickosaurs exhibition. The baby Tyrannosaurus rex is one of five new Lego dinosaur species to be unveiled next Thursday. Other new models include a 4-metre-tall plesiosaur, a spiky 1,500-kilogram stegosaurus, a colourful mochlodon, and five bird-like Archaeopteryx. Marwell Zoo near Coldon Common is the first attraction in the world to host Brickosaurs, which features 50 sculptures in total. Highlights include the largest touring Lego brick dinosaur model ever made, an 8-metre Tyrannosaurus rex. It took an estimated 969 days and more than 2 million bricks to complete the collection of dinosaur sculptures. To help guests track down all the new dinosaurs, there's a free trail map available, and alternatively, they can download the Marwell Zoo app. And there is a delightful picture of one of the zoo's employees, Carrie Arnold, and she's wheeling a trolley with a baby red and blue Tyrannosaurus rex past the Amur leopard enclosure and then further on past the snow leopards. And both animals are looking amazed at this creation going past their fence.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. Thanks to the copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.